I'm Sheila Stewart. I come from Blairgowrie in Perthshire in Scotland.
All right, and you?
I'm Belle Stewart. I come from Blairgowrie, Perthshire, Scotland.
Thank you. I just want to say that in doing these interviews with you, I would like to try to put together a radio documentary if I could, and I'll need to get a release from you just saying that I authorize you to use this material for a radio broadcast. At this point, I expect to put it together and basically just to have it aired. If I ever get any money for it, I would split my fee 50-50 with you. Do you both agree to that?
Yeah, of course.
Yes,
okay.
That's quite all right.
Thank you. And it's also possible that I would put together an article for a folk journal as well about you. It's hard to know where to start because there's so much rich tradition here in front of me. I think I've been impressed a lot by Sheila Stewart's, your passion for your culture. And I'd like to know if there was ever a time when, not that you didn't regard it as highly, but if you were ever more shy about expressing your pride in what you are.
Oh, yeah. Years ago, when we were discovered first, I wouldn't sing. I used to go and hide. It was only in the late 1950s or early 60s before I would come forward and sing on stage or anything. I was so shy all my life, I would never do anything. It's just, I think, being out and about and meeting people that really got me going, you know.
Right. Was there ever a point that because of the culture is somewhat oppressed or discriminated against, were you ashamed that you were a part of that culture, or ashamed of that of having that heritage? Did you ever wish that you were, you know, the mainstream Scot? You know, say as a teen or trying to adjust with your friends at that point, or were your friends totally travelers as well as you?
No. When I was at school, we used to go about in three or four girls of us, but no way in my lifetime have I ever felt that I wanted to join the mainstream. I was proud of what I was, I always have been, and I'll die proud. I was born proud and I'll die proud. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to be like anyone else, because it was a culture that had to be preserved. Mm-hmm. So no, I wouldn't like to be anything else.
Right. Belle, do you feel that the way that you brought Sheila up instilled the culture in her in a very real and satisfactory way?
Well, not only Sheila, but all the rest of my family, they all accepted it because my husband was a traveller, I was a traveller. We had nothing to be ashamed of, but we were still a despised race. You know, we weren't really accepted with the local public. But apart from that, our tradition, we'd never, ever give it up. Rather than try and lose any of it, we always try to add to it. I mean the traveller's tradition. And none of my family have ever been ashamed of what they are. Neither have I. I've had no reason to be. We've just something different to offer to the public, and we're happy to do it. But at one time, they wouldn't have accepted it. They thought we were daft. But that was all wrong. And I like doing what we're doing at the moment. I really do.
Yes. It's interesting that the culture that you've gotten, and now you're presenting it to other people other than travelers, and I gather that it was very much something that bound you together with other travelers. How do the travelers feel about you reaching out to Americans or other people in Europe? I understand you're very popular in Italy as well.
Well, when we started off, the travelling people was terribly annoyed about it. In fact, to this day, there is some of them annoyed that we pronounce that we are travellers, you know, that we've never denied it. But on the other hand, there is travellers that are proud that we do it. And to show their pride, they don't come forward and tell us about it. But they always say, oh, aye, we're connected to the Stuarts of Lair. That's cousins of mine. So this coming back to us lets us know that, say, 75% of the travellers in Scotland is proud of what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But there is that other half that just... they're ashamed of what we do because we're recognised as travelling people.
Is that because they feel you're sharing the secrets of your culture?
Yes, that's what it is, yeah. Mm. Plus, jealousy because we have got so far. But they could get as far as us if they stick to what they are. Mm-hmm. You know?
In a way, could some of it be because, well, obviously you tour a lot, but you don't live the traveling life right now, and is there some resentment if you say you're a traveler and they say, oh, well, I know the Stuarts, they live in Blairgowrie. Am I right in perceiving that?
No, because I don't think you're quite right there, because the traveling people doesn't look on travelers in houses the same as the outside, because the outside folk think if you're in a house, you cease to be a traveler. But ceasing to be a traveller just because you're in the house is a load of nonsense. Because a traveller makes, it's your culture, your heritage, your forebears. You never ever cease to be a traveller, no matter, suppose you live in a palace. So the other travellers knows that we are real travellers. So they know this, you know. It's just the outsiders that doesn't know.
Bell, was it your father who was the Duke of Athol's piper? Am I? No.
I can tell you.
Yes.
No, it wasn't my father. Unfortunately, my father died when I was 7 months old. I never had the good fortune to know my father, but he was the singer of the MacGregors, because my name was MacGregor before I got married. But it was my father-in-law, my husband's father, John Stuart Pitlochry, that was the piper, private piper, to the Duke of Athol, for the 7th Duke of Athol, for 10 years. He was also pipe major of the Athol private army. Mm-hmm. And he won the gold medal at Holyrood Palace in Edinburgh for playing to Prince Edward, to King Edward. That's a long, long time, even before my time, you know. But they were a very, very talented family, my husband's family, in the music side of it. I think we took over more when it came to the folk tales, the singing, the stories, the riddles, and all that goes to make up our culture. That was more on our side. But my husband was really a very good piper. And I'm so proud to know that the tradition has been handed down to the piping for my two grandsons, three, but one doesn't make so much of it as the other two. One is Ian, he's with us at the moment, and the other is Hamish MacGregor, Sheila's both sons, and they're both terrific pipers. And though maybe Ian doesn't admit it, he's a great singer and guitarist as well. He's got lots of other talents, but he sticks to the pipes, which I'm very, very proud of. My husband was a pipe major in the 6th Black Watch at Dunkirk. And he taught a lot of young boys in his time too as well, you know, way back in Blairgowrie. But unfortunately, well, I lost him 5 years ago. But I'm glad that tradition has been accepted. I've also another daughter back in Blairgowrie, Kathy. She's the oldest daughter. And she really and truly is a terrific singer and a great person to meet, but she has a very, very sick husband at home, and she had to cancel this tour. So, you're usually Kathy, Sheila, myself, in the singing,
yes,
and Ian with the pipes, you know.
Yes.
It's marvellous. I'm very proud of my family, and I am a traveller back to the backbone, as we talk about in Scotland, mm-hmm, and I would never change.
Now, I've heard you say you're a traveller and also refer to yourself as a tinker. Mm-hmm. Is there a clear difference between them?
No, it's just the stigma that was when we were younger and when I was born and brought up. All the travelling people were called tinkers. And a tinker was a talented person. He was a man that could make pots, pans, you know, all the different things. He was a very, very clever race of people, the Tinkers. But this terrible stigma that went with the name Tinker, he was looked down so much on, that we prefer to be called travelling people. Because when you heard someone calling you a tinker, 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 you know, they know there was anger and badness in their thoughts against us.
Mm-hmm. Does it bother you if you were ever be referred to as gypsies? Do you feel that that is a different race, or are travelers people who have been in Scotland for a long, long period of time, as opposed to perhaps other gypsies who have more recently immigrated from more eastern parts of Europe?
Of course, we've nothing to do with gypsies whatsoever. I mean, the gypsies came over from India and they went all over the continent. Mm-hmm. They arrived in England about 1760, where the travelling people originates in Scotland back to the 12th century, and that's on record. So we have always been here, but we have nothing to do with the gypsies. But, as I say, they're the same tribe of people, but we are different. We have always been here,
right?
You know, in Scotland.
So in a way, you're like the Native Americans who were the first people.
Yeah, like the Comanches and the Chippewa and things. Different tribes. We are a different tribe from the gypsies, and we are not gypsies.
Since you've been in Scotland for so long, are there, and a lot of your, 50% of your repertoire comes from the Scottish tradition, and the other 50 more or less from the Irish, are there songs that are unique to the travelers and not to the rest of the Scottish tradition?
Well, as Hamish Henderson says from the School of Scottish Studies in Edinburgh, the Scottish tradition has more or less died out. We are the source carriers now of the real tradition of Scotland, be it travelling tradition or other traditions. We are the source carriers. That's the only, we are the mainstream of Scottish tradition. So I don't know about the outside tradition. I just know about our traveller tradition. And the songs that we have was handed down from travelling people. We don't know.
Come in. You won't. She's been going mental. She has been going mental for 2 solid hours.
You know what I am?
He come and says, he's piping on a tower.
Give us your seed. Give us your seed.
Is that yours or mine?
That's mine.
No, you give us your seed. Maybe he fell off the tower.
No, brilliant.
Oh, you can know what I'm for you.
Brilliant.
There's your big book, son.
Oh, that's it. I've lost my wee notepad.
Well, that's mine, sir.
That's good, Mum. I've got notes and everything.
Oh, dear God. You she's been doing nothing to eat. Tea and nothing and all.
Everybody
in the canteen looking for you.
How?
Because something what happened to you. You never tell her.
I thought she was going to sort of go for this. This tower for the folk, but then they used a picnic and everything. I mean, I got fed, everything. There was burns, there was other folk and everything all coming here and me playing. I had to go and play the honest to God, I had to go and play all the pipes and everything further up in this tower. It's about 100 feet up in the air, you climb upstairs to the tower.
She says, maybe he fell off the tower.
No,
good
day, a picnic and everything.
No, dear, I'm attached to them.
Well, you're the grandmother, you're supposed to wear it.
I swear about 2 minutes ago, you lose track of time.
She rung it back. We rung about 2.5 hours ago, I mean, broom bag, look of
me. I bought you a present.
Did you?
Oh, I bought you something.
Well, I'm going to, what time is it square? I'm sorry, I was meant to be back at 6 o'clock. I was saying, I was going to find Cargo. Like, what time is it? 6:45. You're joking, Ken. Flew bus, I have to get back.
She says he had no meat. She said nothing.
Oh, I'm plenty to eat. Good meat too.
You got up to your room just now?
I've just come back, I've just had a wash and change.
So you've been to your room?
Mm-hmm.
So you'll not be going back?
No, we went to see a square dance thing.
Yeah, well we're going down tea, you see.
I want to go and get... you're not finished with it, are you?
No, well, we could do it later or we could do it tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah, mostly I want to get you demonstrating the pipes and see how you build them
right,
and play a bit for
me. Aye, that's fine, I'll do that. I'm sorry if you're not here at 6 o'clock. I arranged, I'll definitely be there at 6 o'clock, I'll be there. This poor man walked all the way out at 6 o'clock.
I've been missing appointments all week. Someone says, please be here to tape, and I come running in halfway through, dragging.
Yeah, he's been sitting outside that door waiting you for 6 o'clock. That's we arrived at 5 to 7.
Oh. And you know we're letting them know at all, no?
Aye, well, I left at 4 o'clock, you see. Mm-hmm. I said, I'll be back in plenty of time, 6 o'clock. But by the time it's about 7 miles out of the town and you've got all the road up to this tower, there's a picnic area and that.
And who took you?
This lassie and her boyfriend I met last night, they gave me her guitar. They heard me speaking to somebody about I didn't have a guitar with me. I'd like to try a short guitar. And she said, oh, you come with me a minute. I thought they would take me away to show me someone. I could jump in the car, they drove me to their house and she gave me her guitar and went in there to use for the rest of the week, Ken.
I told you you could do
that. Honestly, God, it was good. So they're coming to a square dance thing tonight. That's what I was asking the song Bus Bus for. As they sing the song. Okay. She's a school teacher or something in tune, and she sings a lot of Burns songs to them, Ken. So I'm going to
get Bus Bus.
And Loch Lomond, then again, the worst of the back to Loch Lomond.
It was Annie Laurie.
Annie Laurie.
She's got a bit of a
oh, it's good. That's Annie Laurie. I'll get it for you anyway. You didn't see that woman that once. Maggie.
Aye.
Again.
I've seen her.
I've got the tape. I've been carrying the tape with me all day, but I can't get it.
Oh, there's somebody has a tape for you.
I'll tell you who it is. A laddie with a red t-shirt on.
The wee lassie.
Oh, the piping tape that I was at, the Pembroke class, I was at just
before. Oh, aye, well, for the 4 o'clock.
That's good. I wanted a copy, so she was giving me a copy, and I was giving me
one
the tape.
1-4 for a puppy.
1-4, aye.
Buggies is Davey.
Well, I better leave you. Okay.
Buggies Davey. We're coming. It's just over there, isn't it?
In the pit, underneath the stage where we were.
In the wee room underneath the stair.
In the wee room, that's right.
You're not going back to your room, are you?
No.
Oh, well, you'll get that when you come down. Show them what it
Where's
is.
Where's my wee bag?
They have two of them under your eyes.
That's true.
Where's your wee bag? I've got you. Can you find it? I can't even know that.
Oh, my God, it's 4 million.
Pairs of socks.
Oh, that's bloody. It
saves washing.
They need plenty. The thing is, see the T-shirts,
oh,
right?
I've got you some tape.
Clear eyes, that's what's clear eyes. See, kind of T-shirts you get with Augusta Fenton on it.
Aye.
I don't care if you can this. They're $7, right, when you buy them.
I bought one.
How much?
Yeah.
How much was it?
Seven.
For staff it's $3. Do give me clean bought six, I'm going to buy it half a dozen in the morning.
Oh.
You never should tell them you were staff. You get $15.
I'll tell them.
Well, I'll have you want it yesterday.
Yeah, I'll have to do it like Ken.
Is
that
me, yes?
Okay, I want it. When
what kind did you
want
then?
Hard, really hard.
I told you,
I swear.
I'll
leave this here for you, okay?
I'll do it.
Alright, I'll see you later.
So we're coming out anyway.
Aye, I'm going for a drink.
Don't get too drunk then.
That lad, he wouldn't even drink it unless
there'd
been beer in.
Really?
No, nor smoke. Isn't that right? Two of the boys are the same, or two sons. If someone had been drinking out of a glass where there was beer, he would have gone wash it for you. He would never smoke nor drink, the two of them.
But you talk of the wee dram as being of importance to the travellers.
Well, I mean, going away back, even today when they can afford it, you know, they never gave up their habits as far as the wee dram was concerned. But long, long ago, when they stayed away in these remote places and just in these wee tents, you know, and, what other pleasure did they have if they could afford a bottle of whisky? You'd get a whole bottle at that time for about, 2 shillings, what we would call 2 shillings back in Scotland. A whole bottle, well, there was maybe 5 or 6 families staying out beside each other. They would all muck in with so much and maybe get 3 or 4 bottles, you know, so that everybody could have a wee drink, and then that's when the merriment began, you know. But we didn't need to have drink for what we do. But one time we never let pass is Hogmanay Day. That's New Year Eve, you know, not New Year's Day, but the... You know, because even though you only took the least wee drop at 12 o'clock, it's unlucky in our way of thinking not to have that one wee taste. I can't tell you how much you might follow after, but as long as you get that wee drop at the 12 o'clock dead on, you know, you're celebrating what they always done.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of having, you know, the celebration of the New Year's, how many of the traditional celebrations do you still carry on within your family? You know, you don't all live together anymore, but obviously, Belle, you're of great importance to your daughter and your grandchildren, you know, and do you make a special point to tell them about the old days and the old songs, or is it very natural?
Oh, yes, they never tire of listening to the things that I tell them. And I mean, there were things that happened in my, when I was tiny and wee, you know, because I was the only girl and two brothers. And the things we did then, and I must say, I was really brought up a wee bit better than some of the rest of them, because the thing was, the youngest one in any traveller family gets the most of everything. The young ones are the boss, where the mother's concerned, you know. And if we had little food or little anything at all, we made sure that the kids got it first. And then if there was anything left, fair enough, we had our share. But we just put our whole heart and soul into our children. We really do. If they don't carry on as they should do when they grow up, well, it's definitely not the father and the mother's fault when they're young. Give them the best attention as far as we can afford to do, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what makes us so really close. I mean, Ian there, as you heard us talking a minute ago to him, if anything had happened to that boy, I don't think I could have survived. Because even back home, although I've got 20 grandchildren and 35 great-grandchildren, but Ian and Hamish, that two boys, I think it was them, my husband, teaching the pipes, and that they got so close, you know what I mean? They were always with us, and that was it. I love every one of them, and I know every one of their names, but I can't give them all presents at Christmas. Mm-hmm. But they're all round about. I'm lucky. I'm very lucky. Hamish is the furthest away. He's in Australia. And his wife's a terrific dancer. She's the champion dancer of New South Wales in Australia, his mm-hmm. wife. And she's also a great piper, too. Mm-hmm. And Ian's wife, she's the magnificent piper.
That's what he called
her. She really is. Oh, gosh, she is that. We've just got it, and instead of losing it, we're adding to it with the family bringing it, coming up, believing in it, you know? Mm-hmm.
Are there songs that you add to the tradition that you've already know, or that you introduce, or do you mostly keep to the repertoire that you've always known?
Well, we've never given up the repertoire we've always had, but even in this country, since we landed here in the States, we have heard people sing much the very same song as we have back in Scotland, just a slightly different version. So, I mean, even though it is traveller songs we have handed down, strange to get versions of them here. I think Sheila could tell you something about that as well.
You said to add to a repertoire. We do add to a repertoire. If we go someplace, maybe a Cayley or something, and we hear a song and we like that song very much, we'll do anything to try and get that song, and we'll sing it. Oh yes, every day, more or less, if we hear the song that we like, we add to a repertoire.
So what makes you feel?
It's got to have that feeling coming from the heart and take. There's not many songs can do that, you know, that can capture us to make us want to learn. Mm-hmm. But there is the odd one that we come across that no matter what happens, we must learn that song, and we add that to the repertoire. But when we do, we say that it's not our tradition, but we like the song so much that we learn it.
Oops. And in a way, that might become part of the tradition in a couple of generations, because it was something that your children would have learned from you. This morning, oh, and by the way, that's called, what comes from the heart, it's called?
The Cognach. C-O-N-Y-I-C-H. Cognach. It's a feeling you get when you sing the song. Yes, it's not only singing songs. You can get a cognach in a piper, in a fiddler. And that Ian Kennedy is the best cognach that we have ever heard. And we have heard a lot of fiddlers in Scotland. But he has really got the cognach. And I'm sure other people hearing fiddlers and listening to Ian will understand what we mean by the cognach.
When you sing a song, and you sing it differently each time, how do you add the konyich to a song? You change a syllable or stretch out a word?
Yeah, we put the feeling from our heart. We can, as you say, add a syllable. We can stretch a word. We can cut a word. We can make a word go fast, slow. It's just the feeling, how you feel at the time to sing that particular song. You see, my mother and I and my sister, when we go on stage, we don't have the songs written down in front of us like other folks do and say, oh, I'm going to sing this and sing that. We just sing, when we go up on stage, what we feel like singing there and then. We don't rehearse what we're going to do. And if we don't feel like singing a song that the audience maybe wants to hear, we won't sing it. We sing what we feel like singing at that particular time. And we know if we sing what we want to sing, we will put the konyich into it. Mm-hmm. You know?
This may be an unfair question. Could you sing me a small snatch of a song without konyich and with, or maybe it would be impossible for you to do it without konyich?
I've been doing konyich for so long that I don't know if I can do it without the konyich now. Because it's like a foundation to a building. You know, the foundation is there. And then it's the building round about it is our body, but the konyich's implanted. But I see what you mean. You mean to try and do a bit without the konyich and then put the konyich in.
Yes.
So that you can distinguish when the konyich's there.
Or if that's too theoretical to do, sing me something that you feel a very great feeling for, which expresses what you really feel that konyich means.
I'll just sing a verse and a chorus, okay?
Fine.
You sing the chorus, please. When two lovers meet down beneath a green bower, when two lovers meet down beneath a green tree, when Mary, lovely Mary, explained unto her darling, you have stolen my poor heart on the banks of the Lee. Every bush and every bower, every wild Irish flower, will remind me of my Mary on the banks of the Lee.
That answers my question. When your families get together and have a ceilidh, is what you do sit around and trade songs or dances? What would happen at a typical Stuart ceilidh?
Well, a typical Stuart's ceilidh is me and Kathy and my mother. We can have the most fantastic ceilidh, only the three of us. We get a wee dram in, a wee drink, and we sit. And Kathy will ask my mother to sing a song. My mother will ask Kathy to sing a song. Then Kathy will ask me. And within about 10 minutes of singing, the tears is just running out of her eyes. I have never met anybody like my sister in my life. She gets so moved by us singing to her that she can't hold back. The tears just flows and she's just in oblivion. She's got the greatest sense of feeling when me and my mother sings. And we don't need a big ceilidh. The three of us can have a most satisfying ceilidh that you could ever have. Isn't that true?
That's right. Kathy has a fantastic voice, entirely different from myself and Sheila. Sheila's more high, a wee bit higher pitched. And of course, on to my age now, I'm sort of going down the brae a bit, you know. But Kathy's singing and voice does something to us, even as my daughter. Isn't that right, Sheila?
Aye, she's got, as Ewan McCall said, she's got the cognach, but a different style. Her singing is completely different from us. Our pronunciations of our words are different, you know? But it's the feeling she gets. Not all the songs, it's only particular songs that we know we're in for a time when we have got to sing Kathy's songs to her. And she just breaks her heart, but she feels wonderful. You know, elates her somehow.
Why is her style different? Is it just her expression of herself, or did she learn the tradition in a different way?
Kathy's style of singing is personal. It's personal to her. She puts the cognac in, but she put the cognac in later years when she learned the songs. I grew up with a cognac fair. I was sitting on my mother's knee. But Kathy didn't come into it until later years. So she developed her own cognac. It wasn't built in with Kathy. She got it and accepted it and took it. That's why her style is different from us, which is a great thing.
Oh, right.
Because a built-in cognac is different from what Kathy has. Kathy can turn the cognac on and off as she likes. We can't do that. Like you asking me to put a cognac on and take one off. I can't do that, really. But Kathy can, which is a great gift. She can give a cognac or not give a cognac. Because she got the cognac later on in years when she took notice of the traditional ballads, singing the ballads. She always had the tradition. But she didn't learn the ballads from she was 2 year old like I did. She came into it later on in years. And that's the reason why she has a different style.
Was that because she was born after you weren't travelling anymore on the road?
Kathy was born in Ireland. I was married in Ireland. During the First World War, of course my husband was just a schoolboy then. I knew of him, but I didn't know much about him. They lived quite a bit from where we lived. But not only my husband's people, but any amount of travellers went to Ireland, the First World War, because they were all being lifted for the army, compulsory. You know, you had to join. Well, but when they went to Ireland, it was a neutral country, and they weren't compelled to be in the army. So to save them from having to go, we didn't like fighting against people, you see, you know, sort of thing. So that's why they went there. So that's how I met him in Ireland. Got married there, and Kathy, as we talked about, was born there in Ireland. So we have two of the very old Irish songs, as well as our own repertoire. You know?
Actually, that wasn't the reason why Kathy didn't be interested in it. Kathy's 8 years older than I am. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm the youngest. So it wasn't because we settled down in houses that Kathy... Burn?
Purina.
We're speaking about the tradition, Ma.
Sorry, darling, sorry.
Sorry about that. We're talking about Kathy when she came into the tradition. We're not speaking about... Kathy is 8 years older than I am. And it's not because we settled down in houses that Kathy didn't have the tradition. Kathy had the tradition all the time. But it was back in 1954 when we were discovered that Kathy started really to take notice and learn the songs to be as a family. But from Kathy was born, she didn't grow up with the tradition because she wasn't, I'm sorry to say, as interested in learning the songs and ballads as I was. I would rather sit on my mother's knee or my uncle's knee and learn a ballad or a song than go out and play. But Kathy didn't. It was only when we were discovered that Kathy said, well, God, I should have been doing this as well, learning the ballads. But I mean, she is a traditionalist, she grew up with them, but it was that she didn't really take much notice. She knew them, but not to put the cognac in to sing it. Right. So that's the reason why Kathy didn't do it, you know.
Was it Hugh McCall who discovered the Stuarts? No, who was it?
It was a great friend of ours now that discovered us first. Morris Fleming. He's a journalist. He writes for the Scots Magazine and works for the Courier office in Dundee. Mm-hmm. He was the first man that ever discovered us. And then he went and he got Hamish Henderson for the School of Studies. No, we never met Ewan McCall for years and years after that.
But when he was putting together the radio ballots, he got in touch with you?
I did that, yes.
Yeah.
I was on the radio ballot. Down in England, we did it well in London, you know. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of recordings for Cecil Sharp House in London, but that was us all. You know, when we lived in Hatfield, that was outside of London. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of recording then for Ewan and Peggy Seeger. And they travelled to and from Scotland and collected a lot from other travellers as well as us, you know. But we've also have a big book coming out in the next couple of months, you know. In fact, they got so much material from the family that they had to split the book. There was none of the publishers would take the whole thing. So they've split the book and it's in two now. Music and other things is in one and something else in the other. But it will be out within the next couple of months, I think, before the end of the year anyway. It should be good. Mm-hmm. If they've got a novel amount of material.
Actually, when Peggy was up last week, Peggy came up to see us, Peggy and Ewan. They came up to tell us that the book was now accepted. Mm-hmm. Both in America, they've got a publisher in America, and one in Scotland. And they have decided now, the publishers, they said they were going to make it in one book at first, and then they said it was going to be far too expensive to buy. Then they were going to split it because there was too much material for one book. But the last words from Peggy is, it is definitely one book. Everything's in the one book now. That's what she said when she was up the last time. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be pretty expensive. But it's coming out next month.
I'll buy a copy anyway.
Thank you.
Well, you'll have the whole family back when my husband and that was alive and years and all the recordings, you know, and lots of other travellers. My husband, when they used to come to Blairgowrie to visit us or round about, Alec, that was my husband's name, would take them all round the travellers' camps where they would never have got the material because they wouldn't have anyone at that time had approached a traveller with a big tape recorder. They just said, oh no, we can't do that. But the way that my husband had it doing it was, he would go to the tinker's camp or traveller's camp and they would ask him to do something, they wouldn't do it. Alec says, go on, give them a tune, give them a song. But they wouldn't. But Alec would get the pipes and he'd give them a tune or he'd give them a folk tale, you know. And then it was played back. And when these folk heard Alec speaking on the thing, talking, piping, telling riddles and one thing another, they had no trouble then. It was just plain sailing. But they would never have done it on their own. Alec introduced them to them. Mm-hmm. We all did.
Yes.
We didn't.
When you went to do and record the radio ballads, what was it like for the first time to perform them, to, you know, put them down unchangeable for someone else rather than just using them as part of your culture, as part of, you know, the events of your family?
Well, by the time the radio ballad was to be done, we had been recording a lot before then, and we were more or less used to it. And we just said, well, if the people are interested in what we've got to give them, why not go ahead with it? Mm-hmm. And let people know that we really exist and what we've got, the tradition we have. And from then on, it has just mounted up and mounted up and mounted up until we are where we are today with you. This is my second time in the States, and it's Sheila's second time too. She was a different thing.
The radio ballad you're on about, nearly every song that's in the radio ballad, at one time or other, when we saw Ewan and Peggy for years, they made a song about sayings, like sayings like my mother saying, the gypsies are treated better than we are, the gypsies are treated like gentlemen. Now Ewan picked it up from my mother and he said, right, I'm going to write a song about that. The gypsy is a gentleman. He always tips his hat. The one about the go, move, shift.
Yes.
The verse about on a common near a building site where the ground is rutted by the trailer wheels. Well, it was us that stayed on that building site, and the building was what Husbands was building at the time. So this gave him another incentive for another song. You know, nearly everything that we have said in the time that we were speaking to you and about it, give him the incentive to make the radio ballad.
Mm-hmm. And another one he made, what I said, you remember, Sheila, he would ask me, well, what do you think, Belle? Well, I says, well, they always are changing. And that was the other one, you see, so they always are changing, you can't deny.
Right.
The day of the traveller's over, for the no place to go and the no place to bide, so farewell to the life of the rover. But just by me saying, he's a clever man, you know, Ewan. And that was all I said, wasn't it? The always are changing. He made a song out of that.
And you were, and you sung the song that he wrote based on what you said? Or were you singing the more traditional? You didn't sing the song that he inspired.
Was it?
Aye, my mother did sing, she made the radio ballad with you in,
down in
Birmingham.
Oh yes, I was 10 days in London, doing part in London, and 7 days in Birmingham with Charles Parker, because Charles Parker had other travellers too that was recorded. Well, Ewan had their tapes, you know, and that. But I was the whole time there, and I did a film on Hampstead Heath as well with Peter Kennedy from Cecil Sharp House. Mm-hmm. And he had a big bucket, you know, a bucket, and he had some red berries in it, and I had that in my arm, and I was supposed to be in the berry fields of Blair.
Mm-hmm.
And they took the film on Hampstead Heath. You know, so that was another thing. It all had gone into the thing, you know.
Right.
Will you still put together a song out of your experience of the tradition, but one that hasn't existed before? I think you sang one in one of the classes the other day.
My mother is forever making up songs on situations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if she likes this festival. Now, no way can my mother go away and no make a song about this week.
I already did it with that lassie.
Yeah. I mean, she's made one already about particular people that she sees, she makes it. And my mother is definitely, she will not let it settle there. And her experiences in America on this tour, she'll go back home and she will make maybe 10, 12 verse ballad about it. Because my mother is a great songwriter as well. She's made a lot of songs. An awful lot of songs,
mm-hmm.
and they're really good. Not only songs. In fact, I would like my mother, if she's not going to hit me for suggesting it, if she would just give you an epitaph that she wrote for my grandfather, old Jock Stewart. And when he died, she wrote this epitaph to him, which it sums his life up greatly.
Well, as I told you earlier on, he was Scotland's greatest piper. He really was, and he was self-taught. But he couldn't read nor write, because he couldn't read the music. So we were pretty close. He was a very, very good father-in-law, you know. Really extremely good he was. And a great man, really was. So I just said, well, 'tis of a poor but honest man, these words I sit and write. He was not an educated man, but a genius within his right. For he mixed with lords and ladies and folk of high degree. He also travelled the country round, a life that was hard but free. He attended many gatherings, from Dundee to Johnny Groats, and there wasn't a piper in all the land could ever compare his notes. He took part in competitions and was never at a loss with McCall, McLennan and many more, including Willie Ross. He taught, when I think about the things he did, it makes me stop to think of the vast amount of talent that was born in a tink. He taught many pupils in his time, including Hugh McMillan, and to pipe him to his resting place, Hugh was more than willing. But I saw a tear come to his eye as they lowered him in the ground, and many hearts were breaking as they heard that haunting sound. Now this Hugh McMillan. They owned about four different shops, plus the post office, in a place called Kirkmichael, about 14 miles from where we live. And the way that my father-in-law met in with people like that, he used to go around with a pony and cart collecting old junk and anything he could get, you know. But when he came to this particular place in Kirkmichael, he always got a place for his horse, and he could always share a room in the house with them, because they knew he was a piper. So that went on for years, and he taught that Hugh McMillan as a wee boy to the pipes. And he went, this Hugh McMillan went to Rhodesia. He built up two pipe bands, and they all won first class at every games there was. And strangely enough, just about 10 years after my father-in-law died, he died. But that was the Hugh McMillan that had piped at my father-in-law taught the pipes.
That's very nice.
Could you sing me a little snatch of one of the songs you've made up about your experiences here? And would you ever do one of those on stage, or are they more private?
The songs that my mother makes up is personal. It's about her own personal life, family and whatnot. She hasn't made any up yet about her being here.
No.
She'll do that when she goes back.
I see.
But I suppose she could give you a couple of verses of something that she has made up. No. Actually, there is one that I would like to hear her, because she hasn't sung it at all since she came. And I would like her to, the classes that she's teaching, I would like her at one point to sing her own songs that she's made herself, so maybe get her to do that tomorrow to the class, you know. But there is one that I would like to hear her sing, is the song that she made for a, or the tune of the
Loch Dewey.
Loch Dewey. It's Loch Duach, we say it's Loch Dewey. And that is a great tune in the, it's a great tune for the pipes in Scotland. And my mother just made up a few verses about it. And it's my daughter's favourite song.
Let me...